listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. An American Muay Thai Tale, Part 1. The Teacher. Prologue. Today I present the first episode of what I think will be a three-part series about the martial arts organization formerly called the Thai Boxing Association of the USA, but which has been subsumed, along with the Thai Boxing Associations of many other nations, into the recently formed World Thai Boxing Association. I've been training in the kickboxing art from Thailand called Thai Boxing, or Muay Thai, for more than three decades. I've been an instructor in the aforementioned associations for more than a quarter of a century. Today's episode tells the story of the founder and president of these various Thai Boxing Associations, and my teacher, an amazing man named Surachai Sirisut, usually referred to as either Master Chai or Ajarn Chai. His current title is actually Satrachan, roughly translated as Grandmaster, but he has told me that he's less than comfortable with that term. So we'll stick with Ajarn Chai. He was an anomaly as ring fighters go in Thailand, in that his family was wealthy. You see, most Thai boxers come from impoverished families, and they train and fight to put food on their family's table. In Ajarn Chai's case, though, his father was a prominent attorney. As a result, he grew up in a large house with a staff of servants. It just happens that the house was also near a Muay Thai camp, and Ajarn Chai's father was drinking buddies with the man who ran it. When Ajarn Chai was very young, his father introduced him to the owner of the camp, who took a liking to him. Little Chai soon began hanging around the camp, where the owner indulged the boy's obvious fascination with Muay Thai. This indulgence manifested itself by, among other things, allowing little Chai to hurry out and get in some quick kicks on the heavy bags during the rest intervals between rounds, which the fighters were dutifully putting in. Little Chai became a fixture at the camp, and before long, one thing led to another, eventually resulting in Little Chai becoming a very young ring fighter. Normally, you wouldn't expect a child from a privileged class in Thailand to be allowed by his parents to do this. And indeed, Little Chai's mother was very unhappy at the prospect. But his father admired the rugged discipline to which ring fighters adhered, and thought it would be good for Little Chai, who went on to have a very successful career, with a winning record as both a Muay Thai fighter and as a boxer. Unfortunately, as he grew into adolescence, young Chai also began to run with a bad crowd. By day, he trained in Muay Thai, but then often spent time at night with other teenage boys who were up to no good, sometimes even leading to violence, and sometimes even police involvement. Young Chai's father was able to use his influence to protect him from many of the dire consequences that might have resulted had he been from a lower social class. But after one too many incidents involving the authorities, it was decided that young Chai should leave Thailand and move to the United States. His father was very powerful and could have done the easy thing and continued to shield young Chai from any penalties for his behavior. But he wanted the young man to remove himself from the bad influences of the seamy underside of Thailand's society, to learn responsibility, and to reboot his life in a new setting. Young Chai was also encouraged by his father and by a favorite uncle to introduce Muay Thai to the U.S., but in a particular way. You see, Thai boxing, as it was in its home country at that time, was riddled with corruption, brought on by gambling and organized crime. Now, in the year 2018, the economy of Thailand is a real success story. The standard of living has been improving for decades. But this was 1968, well before the economy began its upward climb. And at that time, the majority of the population, more than 50%, lived in poverty. As I mentioned earlier, the typical professional Muay Thai fighter of the time trained and fought in order to feed his family, which quite possibly could otherwise have been living on the edge of malnutrition. It was even quite common for older children and younger teenagers to begin amateur ring careers and then go pro at ridiculously young ages. This allowed them to pitch in to help their families survive, when, in a just world, they would have been enjoying their childhood. Add to this the corruption in the world of Muay Thai at that time. You see, during this period, the percentage of per capita income spent by Thai citizens on gambling over the outcome of Muay Thai fights was greater than the percentage spent by Americans when betting on football, baseball, basketball, and boxing combined. This was a huge cash flow into the pockets of Thai organized crime. To further enhance this cash flow, it was not at all uncommon for the outcome of fights to be fixed by the criminals, with this fighter or that one being ordered to take a dive, motivated by the typical carrot-and-stick approach of organized thugs, meaning that the carrot would be a little extra something in the fighter's pay envelope, and the stick, well, you can probably imagine what the stick would be like. When, as I've already stated, you go through all that it takes to become a Muay Thai ring fighter in order to feed your family, and despite the fact that you are a proud, tough ring fighter, you would be likely to swallow your pride and take the dive. Such humiliating treatment of valiant ring fighters was galling to pure fight fans, like Ajarn Chai's uncle and father, who recognized that he was a gifted ring fighter. His father was also able to make sure that young Chai was never forced to throw a fight himself. Ajarn Chai's father was a powerful attorney who represented elite members of the Thai military. In other words, his gang was much bigger and badder than any organized crime syndicate. But young Chai's father and uncle were still enraged by the corruption that besmirched the beloved national sport. So they informed young Chai that not only was he moving to the United States to stay out of trouble, but he was being given a quest as well. That quest was, as young Chai rebooted his life in America, to give Muay Thai a clean reboot outside of the country, unsullied by the criminal element, to introduce this ancient sport into new countries and cultures, starting with the U.S. Of course, this would have to start by cultivating students and teaching them thoroughly and well. What a brilliant choice! To harness the ego and ambition of a young person, to give him a chance to use the amazing fighting skills he had developed for a good cause by tasking him with such grave responsibility, was an act of genius. And it worked. 50 years ago, this year, at the young age of 20, Surachai Sirisut moved to the United States, where he was to become the first person to introduce Muay Thai on anything like a significant scale to the Western Hemisphere. Once here, he began working with students from a variety of backgrounds, including in the very early days members of the legendary motorcycle gang, the Hell's Angels. He laughs when he recounts this, saying, "At the time, I figured that with the word angels in the name of their organization, they must be good people." Now think about this. In 1968, Ajarn Chai, at about 5'5" or so, couldn't have weighed more than 135 pounds. For several members of this infamous gang, notorious for the toughness of its members, to be convinced by a tiny Asian gentleman who spoke little English that he could teach them how to fight better than they already did speaks volumes about his abilities. I've known Ajarn Chai now for 32 years, and he is indeed one of the quickest athletes I've ever met, as well as profoundly powerful, especially, as you might imagine, with kicking techniques. In addition to a few outlaw bikers, he worked with students at several universities in his early years in America. He developed a number of promising students before he met the individual who was to drastically increase his ability to fulfill his mission. Episodes 78 through 81 of this podcast series were entitled One or Two Degrees of Dan Inosanto, Parts 1 through 4. They tell the story of Bruce Lee's friend, student, and successor in the instruction of Jeet Kune Do concepts, and my teacher, Dan Inosanto. They are also, by the way, by far my most popular episodes so far. Part of the story I tell in them is that after the death of Bruce Lee, Mr. Inosanto tried to continue Mr. Lee's quest for martial arts knowledge by exploring new styles and by searching for new teachers and training with them. In 1978, one of Mr. Inosanto's students, a young man from Thailand, told him that he knew a man who could teach him Muay Thai. That man was Ajarn Chai. Mr. Inosanto's student arranged an introduction, and soon these two titans of the martial arts met at Ajarn Chai's house. Ajarn Chai began Mr. Inosanto's first lesson by watching him kick a heavy bag that hung in his backyard. He explained and demonstrated some finer points of technique, then told Mr. Inosanto to keep going, and then went into his house. He went out the front door, got into his car, and drove to the mall. He wanted to see just how serious this famous successor to Bruce Lee's legacy was when he said he wanted to learn Muay Thai. Would such a prominent martial artist have ego issues, as so many do? 2 hours later, he returned to find Mr. Inosanto still kicking the bag, a circle of sweat adorning the ground beneath him. Keep in mind that at this point in his life, Dan Inosanto was in his 40s. Despite being a famous martial artist, Dan Inosanto had proven himself humble and persistent. This was the beginning of a friendship that endures to this day. Ajarn Chai trained Mr. Inosanto in the rugged, effective art of Muay Thai. And Dan Inosanto threw his weight into Ajarn Chai's mission to promote Thai boxing, making full use of his extensive connections in the martial arts world. 40 years later, Dan Inosanto is an Ajarn himself and serves as the vice president of the World Thai Boxing Association. Ajarn Chai regularly tells people that Dan Inosanto was the huge factor in the subsequent explosive growth of Muay Thai in the U.S. As a matter of fact, it's my opinion that between the arrival of Ajarn Chai in the U.S. in 1968 and the explosion of popularity in MMA in the early 90s, the single most important development in the growth of Muay Thai in the U.S. was the meeting of and then the alliance between these two martial geniuses. Mr. Inosanto was able to use his connections to open doors for Ajarn Chai, allowing him access to a larger potential pool of students. And equally important, Mr. Inosanto enthusiastically promoted Muay Thai himself in the martial arts media and in his many seminars. As a matter of fact, 1 week after I first met Dan Inosanto in 1984 in St. Louis, he gave me my very first hands-on experience in Muay Thai. But that story, dear listener, must wait until next episode. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.